I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to The Functional Nerds. This is going to be episode number 227.
It's 227, Patrick.
It is.
I don't remember how the 227 theme song goes.
I don't either. I have to look it up.
Yeah. Wow, 227. Boy, you know, it's the shows you remember from when you were a kid.
You just showed your age like crazy. Yeah,
oh, I know. I know it.
Oh, well, it's even worse because the star of that show was, of course, part of the Jeffersons.
Oh, yeah. And I watched a hell of a lot of Jeffersons, too. But that is Patrick Hester, who's an author and a blogger and a podcaster, a Hugo Award-winning podcast for the SF Signal podcast. You can check him out at atfmb.com and follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anilio. I'm a musician and a podcaster as well. You can check us out over at functionalnerds.com. You can follow me on Twitter at John Anilio. And today we are joined by Peter V. Brett. Peter V. Brett is the author of an ongoing series, and it's got The Warded Man and The Desert Spear and The Daylight War and the new one coming out as you listen to this, The Skull Throne. You can check out Peter V. Brett. You can follow me at PV Brett. And I wish I had your website up here. Hold on a second. Pete, what's your website?
www.petervbrett.com. Easy to remember.
Oh, very good. And Pete, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me. I just quickly looked up the last time I was on. When you told me this was episode 227, I was curious. So I was on episode 20 and episode 87. I didn't realize there have been that many episodes since the last time I was on here.
We're pretty consistent. We've been doing this quite a bit.
Yeah, well, we do it every week. And I think for whatever reason, we just missed your last book launch. So I think we had you on for Warded Man and then for Desert Spear. And then we missed the last one. And now we're the new one. And yeah, I mean, it's 52 episodes a year for a couple years. So it really adds up after a while.
So but now, Peter, don't give John a clue. John, do you know what the V stands for?
No, I don't.
I don't think anybody does.
Maybe vengeance. He doesn't want us to know.
I don't think he tells me.
Vengeance. Peter, Vengeance Brett. That's good.
I will tell you a secret that will then no longer be a secret unless I beg you to take it off because I don't want it on the internet. My middle name is actually, my full name is actually Peter Vincent Dalton Brett. The Dalton is the Irish side of my family. And I don't use the D because then my middle initials would be VD, which I really
So that actually reminds me. There's a show on the CW. I watched like 10 minutes of one episode, The Vampire Diaries. And I'm just sitting there going, oh, I can't watch this. Now, when I watch Arrow or Flash, they always do the commercials for The Vampire Diaries, and their logo is VD.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess vampirism is sort of like a sexually transmitted disease.
That's,
you know,
terrible,
like you bite somebody and drink their blood, and then you get infected with vampirism. So it is a legit acronym for them, I would guess.
No, it's not. It's terrible. And because there's all these teeny bopper 20-year-olds watching that show, and of course Todd from my critique group, and who is not a teeny bopper 20-year-old, but it's just like VD. It's like, really? That's your logo. That's what you're going to do. You couldn't come up with something better than VD. Seriously. It's just terrible. I don't know.
So for the remainder of this episode, I'm going to refer to Peter as Vengeance. So Vengeance, why don't you, this is book four, and so this is a big one. So, you know, all your books are big books, so this is a big one too. I got an arc sent to me, and so why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about it, maybe a little bit about the series overall, and then what they can expect without giving any spoilers away of the new book.
Oh, okay. So the Demon Cycle series is set for 5 books. I will theoretically still finish it in 5 books, which means this is the 4th one coming out now. I have 1 left to tie it all up. I'm 85% sure I can tie it all up in 1 book. It might be a colossal book that the publisher decides to split into 2, but if that happens, that won't be my preference, so we'll just see how it works out. I can't say for sure because I haven't written it yet. but my plan is to finish this series. So if it gets extended, it's not due to any kind of conniving on my part. I really want it done. So anyway, the Demon Cycle is a series set in a world where demons rise out of the ground every night and slaughter every living thing around. These creatures are immortal and immune to most regular weapons, and so the only way to protect yourself is to surround your home or your property with magical symbols called wards through which the demons cannot pass. The idea is that this was once a technologically evolved civilization, much like ours, until the demons returned and knocked us back into more or less medieval times. So the story opens up with people kind of cowering in fear every night as the demons come out, with no real way to fight back. And the story goes on to introduce us to a number of young characters who have a demon encounter at some point in their early life, and how they are affected by it and driven on to different paths which lead them to become key players in a sort of resurgence of humanity that goes on as the series continues.
And as we mentioned way back in episode 20, those wards were very, very important to you and to the story itself. So you hired an artist who designed those for you.
Yeah, that was Lauren Cannon. You can look at her stuff at navate.com, N-A-V-A-T-E. She is a fantastic artist. She's done a bunch of the art for my website. She's done portraits of a lot of my major characters, and she designed all of the ward symbols with me. We sort of worked together to talk about what I wanted, but the designs are hers, and they are fantastic, and they've been a huge unifying factor in the series. I've made a point of arranging with her that I would have the copyrights for them so that I could just give them away. And so I've sent an art pack, including the wards, to every one of my 26 publishers worldwide. So almost every edition of the books includes those symbols, and it's become like sort of a real unifying factor, so that no matter what country you're from and no matter what language you're reading the books in, if you go to my website, you're going to see all those symbols and recognize them and feel
sure
at home with the series.
And that I think that was a very, very clever thing for you to do. Because number one, it kind of, you know, you never know what's going to happen when you take your book to a publisher and then their art department gets involved. You never know.
I was a production manager and art director in for like a PR firm, and in like doing like pharmaceutical advertising and publishing. And so I frequently would hire artists to do design work. I would build websites and make promotional materials and things like that for these sort of big pharma companies. And as a result, I had a skill set that sort of was directly applicable once I sold my books. And so I was able to make my own website, or at least know how to outsource it and ask for what I logically wanted and not get oversold stuff that I didn't need, and hire artists and like give them a fair contract to put materials together. And I've made a bunch of promotional materials like book plates and other things to use for giveaways. And all that just kind of came from my old career sort of having a lot of transferable skills to my new one.
Very cool.
Cool. And one of the things that I notice you do quite a lot, Peter, is on Twitter and other social media, you'll tweet out, you get a fair amount of fan art, and you also get, you mentioned the wards. You know, I've seen you tweet out people get pictures of like tattoos of the wards and stuff like that. It's super cool. Like how does that feel as an author to have people put ink on their body that is related to your books?
It was terrifying at first. For the first few, I was like, "Are you sure you want to put that on your body? I mean, like what if the sequels suck, or like what if I kill your favorite character, or whatever, or what if like you know you just get a little older and you like kind of look back at those books, like I look back at some of the books that I liked when I was younger and say, "Ooh, why did I do that?" But now, so many people have gotten ward tattoos. Like, it's dozens of people have ward tattoos that I know of, and there might even be more. And it's amazing. It's a wonderful, incredible feeling that people are so feel so touched by the characters and the story that they want to make it a part of them. And it's kind of symbolic for how the story has become a part of a lot of people. I think that I have a nice, very varied and diverse group of characters, and so there's sort of someone for everyone, and I guess a lot of people have really connected to that and the story and wanted to commemorate it in a sort of permanent way, and I feel amazing about it. It's such a huge honor.
That is awesome. That's really cool. Well, you know, I want to actually transfer over because I have a couple of different things I want to talk about today with you, but let's move on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Peter, why don't you go first? What's your pick this week?
Okay, so my pick this week is a book that is not on sale yet, but it will be soon. It is Uprooted by Naomi Novik. Naomi gave me a advance read copy a couple months ago, and I set it aside like I do all my advance read copies. And then last week I had a free moment and I decided to give it a read, and I could not put it down. It is amazing. So Naomi Novik is the New York Times bestselling author of the Temeraire series, starting with His Majesty's Dragon, all of which are wonderful books in their own right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But that series has been going on for a very long time and has sort of, you know, become a soap opera, as all ongoing series tend to do. This book is a one-shot. It's a completely new world, completely new story, and finishes in one book. So you can just read this book and nothing else. It is told in the first person, sort of like a Pat Rothfuss or a Robin Hobb story. And first person, I think, personally, is a very difficult style to write in. But Naomi puts together a sort of half fairy tale, half like Wizard's Apprentice story that is incredibly compelling. And I couldn't put it down. It's a fantastic book. I highly recommend it. So that should be out, I don't know, relatively soon. They're
very
looking
cool.
For blurbs. So it's
cool. Yeah, I actually have that arc sitting here too, so I'll have to.
You should absolutely read it.
I will move that to the top of the pile then.
Yeah.
My pick this week is Half a King by Joe Abercrombie. I just finished that a couple weeks ago, and I have not read Joe Abercrombie's other books, which was one of the reasons I wanted to read this. And I know anytime I talk about reading this, everyone's like, "You got to go back and read all the other ones." And so this is—I don't think this is related to his other series. And this is. You know, I've seen it. I guess it's sort of geared as towards a YA market, but I love this. I thought this was just for a fantasy novel. I just thought it was so tight. I just thought there was not a wasted word in this. It's only 275 pages long, and he manages to like work a really satisfying hero's journey and a you know, kind of a band of travelers, and I just thought it was excellent. I just thought it was really well done and very satisfying. A couple twists and turns and just great stuff. I mean, I know why he's so highly regarded after reading this one book. So now I've got a bunch of his other books sitting here, so now I'm going to go back and read all the other ones. But I think book two is already out in this one, which I think is Half a World, I believe.
If it's not out, it's about to be, and I will tell you that you're in for something good, because Half the World, I would say, is half again as good as Half a King was, which was half as well received as it deserved.
I feel like I'm suddenly listening to the party speech under the tree from Bilbo.
Half the World is better than Half a King. And I read it and I really, really enjoyed that one too. So that's a great series. It's Joe's other books are a little different from these. They're a little more dark, so this is a good sort of easy introduction to his work.
Yeah, I just felt like he really got to – he just didn't waste any time. And I know his other books are dark and they're a little gruesome from what I understand. And this is –
they're great. But
yeah. And these, you know, there's a fair bit of violence in these. Maybe it's not as graphic, but there's lots of fights and lots of swordplay and all that. So it's not disappointing in that way. But it's just, I just love that it's, there was just no wasted time in this book. He just really got to it and got you into the world and got you into the characters. And I just think it's excellent. So yeah, that's Half a King. That's by Joe Abercrombie.
Patrick, wasted days and wasted nights. No, I'm sorry. Okay. I have two picks this week. And the first one is spoilery, and I'm warning people right now, hit your little button to go like 2 minutes ahead if you don't want to have a spoiler for Star Wars Rebels. But this is like the worst kept secret of spoilers ever.
Okay, before you even go.
It's been all over the internet, all over, everywhere.
Well, does Peter, because I don't know if Peter watches Star Wars Rebels, so maybe he needs to.
It's okay to spoil it. We've watched the first maybe 5 episodes of it, but I don't really care if you throw a spoiler.
Okay, I know what you're going to say because I just finished watching it, Patrick, so I know what you're going to say.
So there's been ties between Star Wars Rebels and the Clone Wars animated series because they've decided that Clone Wars, you know, when Disney looked at all the wonderful books that people wrote and said, fuck you, and threw them out, they kept the Clone Wars as part of the canon. And so what has been revealed is on Star Wars Rebels is an older, wiser Ahsoka Tana has been added to the cast or is part of it now. She showed up there at the end, which I thought was pretty cool and awesome because it basically means that she did survive the culling.
At least I don't even know who that is. Who is that?
That's Anakin's Padawan.
Yeah, from the Clone Wars.
Ahsoka.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so yeah. She is she showed up in Rebels, so she's helping fight against the Empire.
Yeah, it's the big reveal in the last episode because there's like their contact fulcrum that they're talking to the whole time, and it turns out to be Ahsoka. And I kind of saw it coming from a mile away, and I didn't know about the. You know, I didn't see it on the internet at all, but I'm just like, oh, that's got to be Ahsoka. And I'm really glad they did because that was the most satisfying part of the Clone Wars is at the end of Clone Wars where, again, spoiler, you know, where she leaves the Order, you know, where she says like, you know, no, this isn't, you guys, I don't believe in what you're doing.
Thanks for ruining that for me. We haven't gotten up to that yet.
I told you, it's just Ben Patrick. Anyway, so it's, I really like what they're doing with that show. I think they're really doing a good job, and we'll see. Okay,
so I had a second pick.
Okay, go for it. Then I have questions for Peter.
Basically. So my second pick is I was invited to go see a movie that I would not normally ever go see, and just because I just normally wouldn't do it. And this was at there's a theater called the Mayan in downtown Denver, close to downtown Denver. And it's one of these old Art Deco Mayan style theaters that's been restored, you know, and they've got the old seats and all that kind of stuff. And they play a lot of the independent films. And so they were playing What We Do in the Shadows. And this is a mockumentary. It's made by a New Zealand cast and crew and set in New Zealand, and it's a mockumentary comedy horror about these vampires who are sharing a flat in New Zealand and their lives leading up to the big undead ball that they all love to go to. And you've got like the stereotypical vampire characters, right? So you've got the dandy. And he's like the one who's making them do the dishes and clean up the blood from their victims. And, you know, could you, when you bring someone and you're going to have them as a victim, couldn't you just put down the newspaper, catch the blood. And you've got the Dracula kind of guy, right? He's got the long hair and the little goatee thing, and he's supposed to be very charismatic, but he kind of lost all his charisma and his power to hypnotize you during this fight with the Beast, who is this character that's, you know, throughout the whole thing, they always talk about the Beast and his battle with the Beast. You've got the Nosferatu kind of character, Peter, who lives in the basement, and they kind of give him chickens to eat. And it's ridiculously funny. I didn't know if I was going to like it. I didn't know what it really, I just kind of watched the trailer and thought, what feels very British to me. And I went and saw it, and I couldn't stop laughing. It was hilarious. And it's What We Do in the Shadows. Again, it's by this New Zealand crew. I guess they also did Flight of the Conchords.
Is it recent?
2014. So it was probably like the end of 2014, and it's hitting our independent theaters here in Denver now. And it was pretty funny, you know. And they've got like the vampires versus the werewolves.
Oh, yeah, it's playing right now.
And I don't know. And like they make another vampire and they don't like him, but they like his human best friend. So they kind of keep him around because human best friend starts teaching them about the internet and how to Google things. And they didn't know that you could do that, you know. And I don't know. It's a very funny movie. And I never would have went to see it if someone hadn't said, hey, let's go see this. And so I highly recommend people check it out. What We Do in the Shadows.
Cool. Well, you know, I actually wanted to ask Peter a question because we were talking about the Star Wars stuff. And, you know, a conversation that you and I had, Peter, it was about a year ago or so, we were talking about Star Wars Clone Wars a little bit. And one of the things that you were concerned about, you being the father of a girl, is that, well, anything we're going to watch or be invested in, I want to make sure that there's a character that my daughter can relate to, that I can see in her. So the question I wanted to ask is sort of related to that, is what are you finding that's sort of meeting those expectations for you? And also, if you've not heard yet, they did announce one of the Star Wars spinoff movies is Rogue One, which is supposed to be about Rogue Squadron, and the main protagonist is cast as Felicity Jones, so it's going to be a female pilot as the main character. So I don't know if you heard about that. What do you think about that? And what are some things that you know you are finding that has good female characters in it as a an example?
I am endlessly disappointed in this quest, and it's really. It's frustrating, and it's something that is particularly bothersome because I didn't even notice it until recently. And that's the thing that's one of the things that bothers me most, is that only now when I'm watching things with my daughter do I suddenly realize just how few female characters there are. We were watching Iron Man 2 this morning, and I was like, all right, that's got Black Widow, it's got Pepper Potts, you know, there's female characters in there. And then I watch it, and I was like, okay, it's got Black Widow, Pepper Potts, and then 1,000 men. Like, it's a total sausage fest, except for, like, these isolated scenes that have these two women. And so, like, yes, there is a scene where Black Widow, like, kicks a little ass, but then every other character, whether it's a main character or a side character or a dude sitting at a monitor, you know, or, like, the guards at a place or like, whatever, all men everywhere. Unless the women are like in something scanty and like dancing for Tony Stark. And I noticed this more and more with so many movies is that it's not just that there aren't any main characters, but like even the bit characters are not female, and it's maddening. I've been trying to find shows that sort of break away from that Cassie can get into. We've been watching Legend of Korra. I started Avatar, The Last Airbender, because I wanted a female protag. We watched a couple of episodes of Avatar 2, and at least there's a solid female character in that as well.
There's two.
Yeah.
That's in Korra, yeah. In Korra, yeah. There's the two main and Avatar.
Well, we haven't gotten that far, I guess.
We're still
pretty early on.
Yeah.
And so there's that. We've been trying. She's really into Star Wars right now, and so I've been trying to find a Star Wars things that clicks with her. She loves the Lego Star Wars show, which is amazing. But they only made, I think, 11 episodes of it. Hysterically funny, but they stopped making them.
Well, I just saw too with that they're
going to do the movies.
Yeah, they're doing the first three movies as Lego.
I thought they were doing all the movies.
Oh yeah, you're right. They're doing all six movies.
Amazing,
and I think it's all going to be from the droids' point of view.
Correct.
I think it's all basically the droids going through the six movies.
Yes.
Legos. So that should be pretty good.
This is another thing, and so this is something that makes me crazy. Now, like again, now that I notice it, it makes me crazy. All droids are male. They're all male. Like every time someone makes it, like there are no female robots. There are gender neutral robots, and there are male robots. Hmm. Like. And so, like, there's never a female robot. Anytime there's a monster, it's always a male monster. There's no female monsters. Like, this shit is making me nuts. And it's something I'm very careful to not make that mistake in my own work. But, like, now that I look around for it, like, it's everywhere. It's pervasive, and it's a serious problem. And it's a problem, like, in general for, like, social justice, but more than that, it's a problem because makers of these things are leaving money on the table by excluding their female audience, sure, by not having something that a female audience can relate to.
Well, and it even goes into, like, I tweeted out and put on Facebook, I really wanted some sweet tea one day. Sweet tea for me is a comfort food, and really the only place I can get it during the day would be to go to McDonald's. So I go to McDonald's and I order some lunch, and I'm sitting there, and as I'm sitting there, this mom and daughter walk up to the counter, and the mom says to the lady, she says, my daughter wants the Happy Meal, but she wants the one with the Hot Wheels toy. And the lady taking the order says, well, you understand that's the boy's toy. And the lady says, don't tell my kid how to play.
Yeah.
You know, my kid can play with whatever she wants to play with. She wants to play with the car, she can play with the car.
Yeah. But it's that there aren't even, like, but there are no girl toys. Like, there's girl toys like Barbies and My Little Pony and things like that. And there's nothing wrong with those things if that's what you're into. But, like, my kid's into Star Wars. And I went to Toys R Us, the flagship Toys R Us in Times Square. This is, like, the biggest toy store you've ever seen. They have four floors. There's, like, a Ferris wheel inside the building. There's, like, everything. There, any toy should be there. And they have a huge Star Wars section. And we went up to the huge Star Wars section, and she was like, she wanted a Star Wars toy. And so we look at all the action figures, and other than Slave Leia, there are no female action figures.
They didn't even have an Ahsoka?
They have Star Wars Rebels figures, but they only have Ezra and the Jedi dude. And they had Clone Wars stuff, but it's only Anakin. You know, it's easy to get a Yoda. It's easy to get an Anakin. You can get all different kinds of Stormtrooper or whatever. None of there are female characters. They just don't merchandise them because right. they're working on this dated and stupid assumption that A, boys won't play with girl toys, and B, that girls aren't going to be interested in Star Wars. And I know a ton of girls that are interested in Star Wars, and I went in there with money to spend, and if they had had the girl toys, I would have bought them. But, like, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not that she won't play with male action figures, but why should she only right. have that option? Why shouldn't she have the option to have a character that she can relate to? They had a statue of Ahsoka in that Toys R Us. Like, above all of the Star Wars section, they have like an Anakin statue and an Ahsoka statue with these huge lightsabers, but no toys. Like, none of the Star Wars Rebels toys, none of the Clone Wars, like, nothing.
And isn't
not even a Princess Leia with clothes on.
Well, and I think that's a Disney bias, because Disney basically said years ago when they bought Marvel, they're like, we're buying Marvel so we have something for boys.
It's it's everybody's bias, though, because it was Marvel's yeah. bias. It's DC's bias. DC has a crapload of female characters, but they're all dressed like hookers. Like find one that is dressed in a way that, like, is appropriate and that like is a positive role model for young girls is almost impossible. There are tons of positive models for boys and nothing for girls.
You know, you were talking about how they're dressed. I have 2 points about that. Number one, my wife plays the Words with Friends game, and for some reason she's not bought it. She still has the free version that she gets all the commercials. So the commercials are, and my wife is, like, not into any of the kind of stuff that I'm into in terms of, like, reading or anything like that. So the God of War commercial kept coming up on her phone, which is Kate Upton, very scantily clad. And so my wife is just like, why would you, like, she's like, how are you supposed to fight with, like, your boobs hanging out and this, and I don't even get it. And, like, I'm like, you're right. That is what one of the issues is. And to look at the other side of that, I hope I don't pronounce her name wrong, but Lauren, I think it's Panapinto.
Oh.
No, yeah. Lauren Panapinto. From Orbit. She's the art director at Orbit. I don't know what her title is. So she's the art director at Orbit. She had a great piece the other day that showed sort of female characters dressed appropriate for what their jobs are. And there was some really amazing, beautiful artwork. And I think Tor and IO9 both had it up. I don't know if it was like her own blog first and then they kind of linked to it. But I think Tor.com and IO9 both had posts about it. And some wonderful, like Jean Grey and Red Sonja, and a lots of cool sort of appropriately fashioned female characters that I think people should check out.
Yeah, I remember her posting that. Lauren is one of the contributors to a blog called Muddy Colors.
Right.
A sort of art blog, like in the SF world. And so I'm pretty sure that was a Muddy Colors post. So if you go to the Muddy Colors blog and look for Lauren's entries, you should probably be able to find that.
I think that's what it was. I think Tor and IO9 linked to the Muddy Colors post. Yeah. That's what they both did. So some really cool stuff there.
And this is something that we talked about at Capricorn. I was on a panel, and I think they put me on the panel because I do marketing. That's what I do in my day job. But I was basically on this panel with four other women, and we were talking about how companies market to women. And the it's like the standard is, well, if you want to market this to women, you got to change the color to pink and put some sparkles on it, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, that's not the way you do it. That's
Kate Elliott just wrote a fabulous article. I'm not even sure where she posted it, where I read it, but it's the article is called "Writing Female Characters as Human Beings," and it basically spells out, like, it's not enough to include women. You have to include women in such a way that they are just people and not objects, either, you know, of, you know, like something that the hero is trying to acquire, or a sex object, or a, you know, maternal object, or, you know, like women, like men, have hopes and dreams and desires and talk to each other about things other than children and you know, love interests. And if you want to have a well-rounded story that feels like the real world, you have, like, women are everywhere in our world and throughout our history, and have been part of war and have been part of every aspect of life. They've run businesses, they've done menial labor, they've done everything that men have done since the beginning of time. And when you write female characters, or when you write anything, not just your main characters, well, you have to think about your B-list and your C-list characters. The wagon driver, you know, the you know, person that works in the at the tavern, the whatever, like, all of those bit characters, half of them should be women at least. And if they're not, then you are not doing something that is reflective of our reality, and you get the sort of same thing as when I was watching Iron Man, where it's like, wow, there are only two women in the entire Iron Man movie, like, other than, like, dancers. And it just, that is not reflective of reality. And that's the sort of thing that is a easy mistake that so many writers make, and it hurts everyone to make that mistake.
All right. Yeah. So, Peter, you know, maybe switch topics and move on to slightly lighter. But thanks for getting into that.
I
knew you had some strong opinions about that. I'm an elementary school teacher, so I see it. I see, you know, because I have through preschool through fifth graders, and girls wear Star Wars shirts too, and girls wear, you know, they're into the same stuff. I think your insights are spot on, because I see it every day in my school. So I'm glad we were able to talk a bit about that. But I did want to mention, because you have the new book coming out, because you have Skull Throne coming out, I know that you're going to be doing a lot of appearances and a lot of cons. So maybe talk a little bit about that schedule, when you're going to be out there, where people can find you, and what your kind of experiences are like with going to all those cons.
Right. So this is the second time I've gone on book tour. The first one was for Daylight War in 2013, and that was kind of a awakening for me. It was an exhaustive couple of months. The thing is, I'm published in different countries, and so sometimes they'll want me to tour in multiple countries. In 2013, I did US, UK, Germany, and a visit to Poland. And so that was a lot. And this year is going to be no better. I'm starting out at Emerald City Comic Con. I'm going up there March 26th. So the book technically goes on sale March 31st, but we have special permission to break the embargo and sell it early at Emerald City Comic Con. So if you are going to Emerald City Comic Con, that's a great opportunity to go in, get the book early, and have me on hand to sign it, personalize it, whatever. I'm also going to be doing a bunch of panels there. I think I'm on a panel with Robin Hobb. I'm on one with Patrick Rothfuss. Naomi Novik's going to be there. Mike Cole is going to be there. A ton of others.
I'm so sorry. so sorry, Mike's going to be there. That's going to be
Mike
terrible.
Mike Cole is my wingman.
I don't know how you – is he your roadie for the – for the tour?
I call him my best friend since 1991. So to give you a sense of just how long that's been going on. And so it's just fantastic that we've kind of both gotten into the same career and get to have our paths cross. He just had a new book come out, Gemini Cell, which is a new series for him. It's sort of set in the same world as his Shadow Ops books, but it's completely separate. And it's the best book he's ever written. And so that book just launched a few weeks ago.
Yeah, we had him on a few weeks ago. Yeah, so we were talking all about it. He just likes, Patrick likes giving Mike crap. So
everyone likes that. I like it too. I'm not but I like, so it's awesome that we both get to do some events around the same time because we're both launching a book this year.
Well, and you've seen him recently. He's gone Duck Dynasty.
With the beard,
yeah.
Well, you know, he's writing fantasy. He's working on an epic fantasy book, and so he needs the beard power in order to help him do that.
He also needs a cat.
Yeah. So after Emerald City Comic Con, I will be doing one signing in Seattle at the University Bookstore, and then I will be at Powell's Books in Portland the next day. And then the day after that, I'm doing a signing in San Francisco at the Mountain View Bookstore. And then I am doing a signing in San Diego at Mysterious Galaxy. And then I'm doing a signing in Houston at Murder by the Book. And then I'm coming back to New York for like 2 days to have Easter with my daughter and my family. And then I'm flying to the UK on April 9th to do a big signing at Forbidden Planet to launch the book there. The book comes out April 9th in the UK. And we stuttered it just so that I could be on hand for both launches. Mm-hmm. And then in the UK, I'm doing two events a day for about a week. So just to rattle it off sort of quickly, I will be in Reading, and then I will be in Bristol, and then I will be in Birmingham, and then I will be in Liverpool, and then I will be in Manchester, and then I will be in Leeds, and then I will be in Nottingham, and then I will be at Milton Keynes. Then I will be back in London to teach a masterclass for the Guardian newspaper with Joe Abercrombie and Francesca Haig. And then I will be at the London Book Fair, and then I'm going to Glasgow for a book signing there. And then I come back to New York for about 6 days, and then I go to C2E2 in Chicago, which is another – it's like basically Comic-Con in Chicago. It's a huge convention. And then I will be in Phoenix Comic-Con in May, and then I'll be at Worldcon in Spokane.
In August.
Spokane? I don't even know.
Yeah. Depends on who you talk to. It's like Missouri, Missouri.
I might trade that to go to Dragon Con because I've never been to Dragon Con, and that I think they're the same weekend.
I don't think they are anymore. Dragon Con will be Labor Day weekend.
Okay. That's in September?
Yeah.
Oh, I might be able to do both then. Okay. Yeah. And then I was supposed to be at New York Comic Con. New York Comic Con is like my home con, and I'm there every year. This year, I might be at a wedding in Ireland at the same time, in which case I will do signing in Ireland. either way.
And if you go to a wedding in Ireland, that means people get to see your legs.
I think that's more Scotland.
No, Ireland too. We have.
Well, I'm not in the wedding. I will just be pending the wedding, so I don't think I have the same kilt requirements as a groomsman might. So if that's the case, I haven't been to Ireland since I was 15, and so it'd be nice to go back there, see some family, and do a signing there. Then I'll come back and go to World Fantasy in Saratoga Springs, and I think that's it.
So in that whole thing, not one time did I hear Tattered Covers, so you're dead to me.
Tattered Covers is in Denver?
Yes.
Yeah.
I've never been to Denver. I would go to Denver if they were sending me there. I go where I'm sent. there's a few conventions that I go to under my own steam. I tend to go to Worldcon and World Fantasy on my own. And New York Comic Con is my local con, so I would go to that regardless. But since my publisher is also in New York, they have a big presence there, and so I tend to go to that.
Understood. Well, Mile High Con's in October, and we have three Tattered Cover independent bookstores here in the Denver area. Mm-hmm. So you might want to put that on your radar.
Okay, I will check with my publicist and see if we have a relationship with them, if we can make that happen. I would be happy to Denver if that was.
So
I was invited out to do that.
Just an example, as we're recording this, we batch record ahead of time. We're recording this on a Saturday. On Thursday, I am going to Tattered Cover to hang out with. She's a New York Times bestselling author, and everybody knows her name. Her name is Gail Carriger. She's doing the Prudence book at Tattered Cover here in Denver.
So. Yeah, I'm psyched for that book. I've been enjoying the audiobook versions of her Parasol books. Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited to have another one of her adult.
It doesn't get a lot of love, but the first three books in the Parasol Protectorate are also manga.
Oh, right. They're right. Yeah.
And those were really well done, I thought.
Yeah, I looked at the samples of those at Comic-Con and they looked fantastic, but I love the audiobooks of Gail's books. I don't like them as much in print. I think because I have to do the funny voice in my head and it's exhausting. But when I have a narrator to do the funny British accent for me, those books are hysterical. I really enjoy them.
I just finished listening to that. The Soulless. I just finished listening to that that audiobook just yesterday, actually, and I enjoyed it very much. And you're right, because I was doing the sync between the audiobook and the ebook on my Kindle, and I was missing something when I was reading it, because then I was just doing. Do you know the name of the narrator who does that, Peter?
Emily something.
Emily Gray?
Yeah. Yes, Emily Gray.
Okay. Yeah, and she's great. I mean, because she does all the accents, and there's like a Scottish accent and an American accent, and she does a really good job with it. And it adds to the humor of the book, I think, the accent. So I really enjoyed it. So.
Once
you've heard her do it, you can sort of keep the accent going in your head when you're reading it yourself. Yeah. But it's exhausting, as I say.
I agree. I kind of had the same experience, but it was very good. But cool. All right. So you are going to be around. So everybody,
you're a busy guy.
Yeah. If you're listening to this, Peter he's like Grand Funk Railroad. He's coming to your town. He's going to party down, and he's going to.
I'm kind of having anxiety attacks about all the travel.
So give him space. Okay. Don't crowd him.
By all means, come out and see me if I'm anywhere near you. I would love it. The reason that I put up with the anxiety of all the travel and the exhaustion of being on the road and being away from my daughter is to interact with readers. And, there's so many people that you interact with online that you never really get to meet in person. And traveling around is the one time where every event you go to, somebody comes up and they're like, hey, I'm blah, blah, blah from Twitter. And, we interact all the time. And meeting old friends for the first time.
And what's funny about that sometimes is, and John might remember this, we were at World Fantasy and someone just kept hanging out with us, and I had no freaking clue who they were until John's like, well, that's such and such from Twitter. I'm like, oh, okay.
I've been talking to them every day and didn't realize it. Yeah.
I will encourage Peter's fans that if you do come out and see him at one of these book signings, please show him your tattoos. They don't even have to be Warded Man tattoos. Just show him stuff.
Yeah, I'll sign your tattoos if you want me to.
Very good. Cool. All right. So the as you're listening to this, The Skull Throne should be out. Go and pick it up. You can check out Peter's website. Again, it's just petervbrett.com. And you can follow him on Twitter at pvbrett. And
do this. If you see him at a convention or something, walk up and say, "Hey, I love your books, Paolo."
God. Now, the real thing to do is to mix me up with Brent Weeks. I had a nickel for every time people confuse me and Brent Weeks.
You guys don't look anything alike.
Well, I think it's because my last name is Brett and his first name is Brent. We both, we're both sort of like the same generation, like fantasy author, grandchild of Tolkien, child of George R. R. Martin level.
I could see it now. But now that you say it, I could see how that would happen to you. But.
We did a signing together. Somebody came up to me and was like, "Hey, I love the Night Angel trilogy." And I was just facepalm.
Yeah, that's embarrassing. But cool. All right, so go and check Peter out and check out his stuff. You could check out functionalnerds.com. I've been doing book recommendations there and sending out emails with it. So if you'd like to get some of the book recommendations that I've been making, you can just it's in the sidebar of functionalnerds.com. Go and sign up for that. You'll get books like Peter's books and Gail's books and other folks like that that I've recently read, and read a couple of a paragraph or so about it, just telling you why it's awesome. So go sign up for that. And Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
Usual stuff. I do want to tell people again, I'm on faculty at the Pikes Peaks Writers Conference in Colorado Springs, which is the last weekend in April. R.L. Stein is a keynote. Shauna McGuire is a keynote. She did tell me at Mile High Con that she was never going to set foot in Denver again because we're nuts and you can't breathe. So she's saying that Colorado Springs is not Denver, so she's hoping that it's going to work out okay. But I'll be teaching Scrivener and teaching podcasting and answering questions about podcasts, and I'm going to be doing some stuff with them as far as their guests of honor and keynotes and stuff. So please come there and hang out. We do BarCon as well if you don't want to pay for the conference itself. There's a BarCon on Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night usually, where everybody's just hanging out in the bar in the lobby, and the bookstore will be open to the public, so you can probably pick up some signed copies of stuff. Other than that, I am on ATFMB on Twitter, ATFMB on Facebook. I do stuff for SF Signal. I do stuff for Kirkus. So there's lots of places you can check me out.
Cool. All right, everybody. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.
Thanks.
Hello and welcome to the 20th episode of the Functional Nerds. We're the guys who like to sit around and talk about computers and technology, science fiction and fantasy stuff, and music, of course, in all its forms, because that's what John loves and that's what he does. And then we record that talk and share it with you, our faithful listeners. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger who publishes his stuff, but I do it online so far. No one's like come to me with the contract thing. So I'm a podcast dude and an all-around functional nerd, no matter what John Ottinger says. My partner in this is Mr. John Anilio Esquire. John, welcome back this week.
Oh, yeah. I'm bummed that I missed last week because you guys did talk so much about music with Modestet. I'm like, oh, I would have had so many great questions. I really, really should. So next time, we'll try to have him on again and we could talk. But anyway, I am John Anilio. I have a blog called scifisongs.blogspot.com. A lot of free music over there. I write songs about science fiction and fantasy things and nerdy things in general. And like I said, lots of that is free. And we do this podcast here every week called The Functional Nerds. And each week we have a third guest. And this week we are very honored to have a great best-selling author, author of The Warded Man and The Desert Spear, and that is Peter V. Brett.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no, thanks for joining us, Peter. Peter, as I said, he's I just finished reading the Warded Man, which is his first novel, first published novel, at least anyway. And he has a a new book out, which is the second part of a series called The Desert Spear, that is out in hardcover right now. And we have Peter on the show to talk about those books and lots of other topics. And I was fortunate enough to meet Peter about a month or so ago, I guess about 2 months ago now, at Balticon. Where I met him at Merle Lafferty's I Should Be Writing live podcast. And Peter and I got to chatting and had lots of good stuff in common. And, you know, I really was looking forward to getting him on the show. So, Peter, thanks for being here.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm glad I finally made it out. It was funny. At Balticon, I remember going to Merle Lafferty's podcast. And I was basically there because I was hanging out with Gail Carriger, who was on the show that night. And when you came out to start playing... I didn't know who you were at the time. And then you started playing George R. R. Martin Is Not Your Bitch. And I was like, oh, I know that song. I'd been like emailing the link to that song to all sorts of people like a month ago. So it was something like, oh, it's that guy. And then as soon as that happened, I was like, I made a point of getting to talk to you after the show. So I'm really glad I did, and I'm glad I had a chance to come out on the podcast with you guys.
Oh, well, thanks. That's really kind of you to say. Yeah, Patrick always does a little outtakes at the end of an episode, so he'll probably end up working it in the outtake.
Hello. Hey. Hi there.
Patrick, are you getting any of this? Or?
I'm sorry, I was distracted by something else. I'm easily distracted. I apologize. I'm just trying to find my pen. Someone has stolen my pen. And John just went offline.
Freaking Skype, man. It's like, how dare this amazing new technology not be perfect yet?
John is still on a Wi-Fi connection. He's out in his garage. So
literally?
Literally, he's in his garage, yeah. That's the quiet spot in his house right now.
Like, I have some questions.
Do you have Merle Lafferty's no cursing rule?
No, you can curse. That's fine.
Hey, hey, watch your goddamn language.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm from Brooklyn, and I'm just afraid that, like, the Brooklyn's going to come out, you know?
No, let it come out. It's totally fine.
Well, yeah, it's like the Rolling Stone guys told McChrystal. Like, oh, don't worry. It's fine. We won't print that.
When has the press ever screwed the military? Come on, dude.
Never.
Have another beer.
It would never happen. How could you imagine that would happen?
Now, John, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Have you ever actually written a song about The Hobbit?
No. No, I haven't, actually.
Your website is a lie. Next week, I expect a song about smog.
Okay, see what I can do.
That would be kind of awesome, actually.
Yeah,
or you could just take one of Tolkien's songs and actually put it to music.
Ooh,
they did that in the Rankin Bass like animated
Frodo of the Nine Fingers. And 207 episodes later. John still hasn't written a song about The Hobbit.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home.
go.